Well, if I don't want to prophesy, you know, I don't want to say what someone else will do, because Jack Froese and John Tietjen are the most directly opposite people I've ever known in my life. John Tietjen is the most predictable person I've ever seen. He's like Pavlov's dog or whatever it is. He's like my knee. You pull it and it goes up every time. I know exactly how Tietjen will react to anything that happens. And don't ask me how, because it ought to be obvious to anybody. Brother Jack, I've lived with him all my life, and I still don't know what he's going to do next. No, nobody else does either. And I'm not saying that for him or against him, but I'm saying it so that when I predict, you'll realize I'm not at all sure. But I kind of have the feeling that he will, and he will be compelled to act in respect to Restmeyer, Hecht, and Riedel. I believe that he didn't want to do it in respect to Jacob, but now he's been sandbagged into it by Jacob. And what happened there was that after he exonerated Jacob and said he'd do nothing about it, Jacob brought to his attention that he had deliberately ordained a Seminex student. However, he had three chances in talking to Jack to tell him that before Jack made the judgment within 60 days, and he didn't do it. So I think it was a deliberate sandbagging operation to get Jack to exonerate him and then to accuse him of not going according to the Constitution after Jack acted in good faith. Well, Jack will have to act on that. I think he can't allow this type of thing to happen. So now poor Jacobs has to get into it. The other four, I know that the President of the Senate doesn't want to do anything about. And each one is different. Meyer out in Colorado, the consensus is that he's sick and tired of the whole fight. He doesn't want to be a hero. He just soon, I think, retire, go back into Perry someplace. Jake, he's over 60. And you kind of wonder, does he want to go out this way? Or would he like to go out as a president who has obeyed the Constitution? And, you know, he's not going to accomplish anything anyway by getting thrown out. So the chances are he will not act so overtly that it'll happen to him. In the Eastern District, I think the President of the Senate, someday I'm going to tell Frankie there's nobody in the world who tried so hard to save you as Jack Froese, whom you don't like. Because Frankie wants to be a hero too by disobeying the Constitution, but he's not making it. You could almost have a comedy play over some of these things that people don't, they want to do something, but they never get to do it.
Yeah, talk about the same Constitution then.
I am no constitutionalist. When he didn't act against Neuneber, I didn't know it until it happened. And in fact, I didn't know it. I happened to be up in Minnesota in the wintertime and saw him, and he told me what he was going to do. And it's his opinion, right or wrong, that strictly, according to the letter of the law, Neuneber did not break the Constitution. And that Neuneber was very careful that he didn't break it according to the letter of the law. In other words, he did not, quote, authorize, unquote, a Seminex ordination, even though he took part in one. Now, you and I don't understand this type of casuistic sophistry. We think of accessories before and after the fact and things like that. And I'm sure in God's eyes that's the way it always is. But the President of the Senate wasn't about to get himself euchred into a tremendous fight with a case that wasn't crystal clear when there were other cases coming up in 2 months that he would have to deal with that were crystal clear. That, I think, is his opinion. Now, many people on every side of the fence disagree with him. But that, I think I'm reflecting his opinion. Yes.
I was going to say, there's a lot of people from back where I'm from seem to think that we kind of started fighting, you know, with the whole political.
Yeah.
And that he almost got put up, because you take with Jacob, or Jacob, with saying that he never ordained a Seminex person, the next day coming out with
Well, I don't know what district you're from, but I know, for instance, I've heard of, let's say, southern Wisconsin, where they're very uptight about this thing. It depends on the district, but I'm sure you're correct that many people are nervous about it. And of course, in 2 months, things may change totally. He will act, let's say, and then they may not be so critical of the things he didn't do now. I just can't stand it. I frankly don't wish to stand in judgment of him, and I don't understand exactly why he did what he did. But I do know his explanations, and I think I've given them as best I can. Yeah.
I know that didn't he go to the congregation and debate the issues?
Yes. Yeah, his attempt in southern Illinois was very clear. Rather than suspend New Neighbor, he thought he'd bring it to the congregations there and let them do it as a district. Now, in a sense, the congregations did that. They came up with a kind of an equivocal action. Everybody claims victory. It's like Ford and Reagan, you know. They affirmed his ministry one day in a very emotional setting. The next day, they said, but don't break the Constitution. Now, I'm sure that doesn't have to make New Neighbor happy. Because when he asked them to affirm his ministry, it meant affirm my ministry if I happen to break the Constitution, too. So they kind of pulled the rug out from under him. And very frankly, the way I look at it, I think it is a much tougher convention for New Neighbor than it is for the President of the Synod. I think New Neighbor is probably, well, I don't want to say destroyed, but I don't think he has too much future. Yes?
Are there going to be any candidates from here to California?
I couldn't tell you. We will not know whether there are any calls until, well, they'll be coming in now gradually. I know of a few. Eggold might know of some, but at this time I doubt if you will know. Now there will be one. I know there's one call out there to a colloquy student, but that is something quite different. That's engendered by a special congregation. But whether Dr. Jacobs will find calls out there, I don't know. The point there might be this, that there might be some congregations that will insist upon calling a candidate, and Jacobs will be compelled to do it. Same as in southern Illinois. I don't think New Neighbor would particularly want to call a candidate, but he'll have no choice. The congregation will simply do it, and he can hardly refuse. This might happen in Northern Cal. I don't think it'll happen in the English district or the Atlantic, as I said before, because there, those districts, the people, pastors and possibly even a lot of the laymen are strongly behind the position taken by their president. This is not quite so true in Northern Cal, and certainly not true in Southern Illinois. That's the reason why there might be calls in these districts. Yes?
I'm wondering about some of the
No, I think the nine, and this would include Ziegler from Ohio, I'd be optimistic that there should be no trouble, and that if you get a call there, you will get along all right. And I wouldn't have really any worry if I were called to a place like that. The eight are going to be a little different. But even among the eight, some will be different than others. But the nine, Nebraska, Kansas, southern Minnesota even. I don't think you have anything to worry about at all. Yes?
Yeah, the issue that I come from is that the people of my congregation and other congregations in the district have expressed concern with possible.
You wouldn't mind telling me what district, would you? I don't know about Colorado, but in a couple of cases, I have a strong suspicion where the president may move. This is already in the works. And unfortunately, this is a matter for lawyers, not for clergymen. I don't know anything about Colorado, and I would rather doubt that anything's being done there. But where you've got a case where it looks as if the district president is going to try to take these people out of the Senate, then the Senate has a real interest, because those congregations don't belong to the district, they belong to the Senate. And this is a misappropriation of funds, and really not an ethical thing, according to the structure of our particular church body. And so where there's a suspicion of this, I would imagine that the Drawheim, our lawyer, and others are looking into the whole legal aspect of it. It could be a disastrous thing. Yes, that's the way it usually works. However, you'll find that, let's say in the English district, you may have 40 congregations that don't send a penny to the district. They send it straight to the Synod. The Synod, I don't recall, some time ago, I think Dr. Carpenter mentioned, he's the treasurer of the Synod, that, maybe a year or two ago, $100,000 was coming in directly to the Synod from people, congregations. That's nothing. Now it's up to a million. The English district isn't getting all the money from its congregations by any means. Some of the biggest congregations are sending everything directly to the Synod. Oh, by all means. If a district refuses to support the Synod of which it is a member, and which created it as a district, when congregations are consciously giving money to the mission enterprise and schools of the Synod, it is an utterly immoral and tyrannical thing to withhold that money. And the first thing I'd do if I was a pastor of a congregation would be to send it directly to the Synod in order to offset that type of tyranny. Pardon my strong language, but we are not a republic of districts. We are one church which divides itself arbitrarily into districts. And the districts are totally under the Synod. They have no autonomy whatsoever. And for that reason, they were not structured or created by the Synod to withhold funds, but to funnel funds. And it's a very serious thing, particularly, let's say, in the English district, where possibly a good 30% of the congregations are very much against this type of activity, yet they have no recourse. Yes? No. You've got enough presidents that are solidly in favor and sympathetic toward you people to create sufficient calls for all of you. Now, I don't want it to happen that way. I don't want you to get called only in northern Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, and Indiana, and central Illinois. But last year alone, Central Illinois had 22 calls for candidates. Central Illinois. So there are the shortages. And I would say this. Last year, I think a finer bunch of calls and more challenging calls were presented to the students of both, graduates of both seminaries than you had for many years. I mean, I think that most of you will be getting, wherever it may be, sometimes it'll be in these other districts, you will be getting some very fine calls. No, I don't look for that. I think that the Council of Presidents, I think the eight, are somewhat isolated. These nine who are sympathetic maybe to Seminex and sympathetic to a lot of things and not happy, they are not going to break the Constitution and break up the Synod for the sake of eight intransigent people. But if you'd ask your question differently, I might say that to me it's not at all impossible that if one person is disciplined, it's like my friend, my Mennonite friend over in Berlin, all for one and one for all, sort of a blood pact, and they will all resign or try to get their congregations out of their districts out of the Synod. I don't know what they plan to do. Right now, it looks as if the modus operandi is going into the English district. They aren't joining other synods, the congregations, and they're not joining LCM, Lutheran Church and Mission. But a great number of them, three now in Ontario just recently, and other places, are going into the English district. This then would be, I would think, the catalyst for taking congregations out of the synod and into some other orbit. Yeah. I don't know. The faculty did this, I think, primarily because they thought this was a very sincere request of the majority of seniors. And they are not doing it for the first-year men or second-year men, but just this spring. The faculty does accept this idea in principle. Our meeting today was unanimous on that. They all think it's a good idea. Some of them, however, weren't so sure about how to do it this spring, and they have not decided exactly how to do it, but they're going to try to do it. Now, for you people, it's very difficult for me in particular, or even the faculty as a whole, to know how the seniors feel about it. And all I can say is that probably I've been on more things like this than anybody else in the faculty here because of my background. And I hope that there will be no senior here who looks at this thing in any other way than the way in which the faculty looks at it. Namely, as a very fine opportunity to let the student answer some very basic questions about his faith and his position and his intentions out there in the ministry, and get to see a side of the student, a sincere answer to legitimate questions that we've probably never seen before. I've been in on an awful lot of interviews of our colloquy students. Seven of them in a row last spring. We're going to get six of them up here this spring. And believe me, it was a wonderful afternoon for me. I was so proud when those seven guys took those interviews last spring that I was the president of this place. Ed Weber and Ralph Bowman, every time one guy got done, man, is he good. I'm so happy this man's gone to the ministry. I said, he's a Springfielder. Look what we did for this guy. I mean, in a sense, I think the faculty is going to be really quite pleased by seeing maybe a C student that sat there in class, half asleep, give a great answer to some elementary questions. Really, I hope that you'll all look at this in a very positive way. And don't get worried, and don't let any of your peers feel threatened by this thing. This would be terrible, because that's not the spirit, and that, I assure you, is not the way it'll turn out. If any member of the faculty thinks that a student isn't going to make it, I would hope he would, according to Matthew 18, have the decency to go and see the student first, so that he doesn't have to come up there and embarrass everybody. But I don't think you have anything to worry about. Now, I'm not talking to anybody, but I've heard that there might be a few students that feel threatened. Please don't. Yes. No. No, this is untrue. First of all, we haven't even decided. Secondly, the only thing the faculty talked about at all is doctrine. Yeah. One more question from my little boy there, and then we better go home to bed.
Majority for all the faculty to take the culture. And then after that, the new board was voted out, I guess, before the
Yeah, you know, if you guys, all of you, had been in on this thing a little more, you'd have had about a dozen questions like that to ask. Because these are things that have happened, and there are interpretations of these things. And this is, of course, an argument that's going around. Now, let me tell you about that. On the basis of the report of the President of the Senate concerning the Seminex Prophets, not the Seminex Prophets, but all the Prophets, all of us, on the basis of that report, the Board of Control voted, right, without getting the men in most cases, and questioning them at all, but in a very superficial way, whether they thought, not that the man taught false doctrine, but whether he could teach anymore at the seminary. Now, that's important. Do you know what my vote was? Good old Robert Preuss, against whom there had never been any charge of false doctrine whatsoever? 6-5. Only one man in that whole faculty got 11-0. Larry Wunderlich, good old Larry. Everybody loves Larry. Now, nobody voted against me because of false doctrine. They didn't like me. I was one of the minority. And I'll bet you not one of those minority men got the votes of certain members of that board. But the question wasn't whether I taught false doctrine. So this is an irrelevant thing that these Seminex guys are bringing up. The question was whether they thought I was fit to teach at their school. And a majority of one thought I was. And most of them were 7-4, 6-5, 8-3 maybe. None of us came off looking good there. Very frankly, if that's all I could get from a board, I think I'd either quit or want some satisfaction. And why in the world do five people think I'm unfit for the ministry when they've never talked for that thing? They've never talked to me. They've never sat in my classes. They have never accused me of any false doctrine. They know nothing. Now, that is absurd to think that that type of a straw vote sort of thing should stand as an exoneration of these men after hours and hundreds of hours of investigation went into this thing. And certain things were brought out concretely in so many words, in quotation marks, in that great big blue book report. It's there. It's not a question whether this man or that man teaches false doctrine. It's this. When a man is asked, do you believe in a personal devil? What do you mean by person? And he comes for 3 pages and doesn't even tell you whether he believes in a personal devil, I say there's something wrong. That's all in the blue book. I don't know how many of you have read it. But that blue book is a devastating thing. And it would be just like, I don't know, this double jeopardy type of thing. Now, this doesn't go in the church. If you preached a good sermon last Sunday and denied the deity of Christ next Sunday and you were exonerated last Sunday, does that mean the church has to stick with you for the next 20 years as their pastor? This double jeopardy thing, I think, which is their argument, is really a grasping at straws. Pardon me for getting excited about things. But there's been a lot of this type of stuff thrown into the debate and into the picture, which really isn't relevant, unfortunately. Well, I hope it was something. It was a little negative tonight, wasn't it? Next time we'll be positive. I'll tell you about the glories of the Christian ministry and assure you how wonderful it will be out there, no matter what district you go into and so forth. So come back, and thank you very much for coming.